You're listening to TheBody.com's podcast coverage of AIDS 2008, the 17th International AIDS Conference. The conference took place in Mexico City from August 3rd through August 8th, 2008.
This is Erica Nelson reporting for The Body. I'm here at the AIDS 2008 conference in Mexico City talking with Tembe Ngubane, a 23-year-old South African HIV advocate and international speaker. Tembe tested positive in 2002. Tembe, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Can we start by hearing the story of how you found out that you were positive?
Okay, I tested HIV positive in 2002. I was 16. And the reason that why I went for an HIV test was because my ex-boyfriend at that time has gotten sick in the past few months, and then he probably died. And no one would tell me why he died. No one would tell me what he had. So I felt like it was my responsibility to actually find out for myself if maybe he did have HIV or he did have AIDS. So the only thing to do that was for me to go for an HIV test.
So you didn't know for sure that he died of an AIDS-related illness?
Well, I didn't know for sure, but when I saw him when he was sick, I could see the symptoms. Because at school, they used to tell us that if a person is sick, it has HIV, you'll see these symptoms like, you know, when the immune system is very weak, the person will lose hair, the person will get so thin. So he had some of the symptoms, and I was probably not sure because I was not also well informed about HIV. Yeah.
So what happened when you went to get tested?
Well, it was scary, really, because me being healthy and looking healthy and also suspecting that I might be HIV positive, you know, it was not real. So just because I wanted to prevent so many things, I didn't want to die, you know, I didn't want to get sick, I didn't want people to know. So it was a matter of I go and find out for myself, then keep it to myself. And when I was told that I was HIV positive, I could not believe them. I keep on asking them, why do I have HIV and why do I still look healthy? Why am I not thin? Why am I not sick? Why am I not feeling sick? You know, I feel normal and I look normal. Why do I have HIV? So it was very hard for me to accept, you know, but the reality was there. It was either I accept, you know, and take responsibility, or it was either I ignore the fact that I have HIV.
When you went to get tested, did you go all alone?
Yes, I went alone. It was not a planned thing, you know. I didn't plan it. But I was just curious because at that time, I remember in Khayelitsha, it was 2002, and they just opened a Love Life youth center. So I wanted a reason to come, to go inside that Love Life. But I didn't want people to see me because if people saw me going through Love Life, they would think that I'm having sex, you know. So it was very hard for me to go there. So since I was alone, I thought, okay, why do not just sneak into Love Life? So I was sneaking there and just taking a tour, you know. And the feeling was too much for me because, you know, I could see like the condoms. I'm like, oh man, condoms in front of these people. I mean, there are old people here. So I felt like, okay, maybe people here understand. So I thought, okay, maybe let me ask if they do make an HIV test. Lucky for me, I met someone that I knew that has HIV, and he was a counselor. So I asked him if I could have an HIV test, and he asked, why do you want to have an HIV test? And I said, no, you know, at schools, you know, they tell us that if you ever had sex, you know, you must have an HIV test. So I thought, why not, you know? But I was covering the whole thing up. Yeah.
So Love Life is like a clinic or a center? What is it like?
Love Life is a youth center. It has it does many different things, you know. You go for birth control, you go for checkup for STDs, you go for HIV tests, and then they refer you to a nearest clinic. You go there for counseling, you go there for sex education.
What happened when you got the news? Who told you? And
well, the counselor told me. He first explained the procedure and explained everything. And I was just sitting there, you know, just rolling my eyes and thinking, well, you can say whatever you say. I mean, I don't look sick, so I'm not. So poof, the news was you are HIV positive. And I argued with him for like 10 minutes. I argued with the guy. I really wanted an explanation. And I end up believing, no, I'm not sick, you know. These people are just trying to scare me. I mean, what the hell? I mean, I don't look sick. These people are just trying to scare me. But as soon as I got out of the center, now I was starting to hit reality. Now I was facing people. And I felt like everyone could see that I'm HIV positive. I felt like I was losing weight in that moment. I felt like I was going to die tomorrow. Everything just came so quick. It was like an earthquake. So I panicked. In my panicking situation, I panicked and I felt like I have to tell someone. So, and you know, sometimes I think back and I'm like, I did a stupid thing because I just gotten tested and I'm confused, and I go and I told my boyfriend. And because I thought he was in danger, you know, I thought like, if really I'm HIV positive, and my ex-boyfriend didn't tell me he had HIV, and now I have HIV. I mean, what about, you know, like, what about Melika? You know, I owe it to him. I have to go and warn him, you know, I have to go and tell him. He must go for an HIV test to see what's going on. So there I was, I went to him, and like for me, we met on the way, and I said, I'm coming from Love Life. And he was like, I mean, Love Life, what are you doing in Love Life, you know? Because people that go to Love Life actually are people that go with that have STD and are going for birth controls. So I'm like, no, I just went for an HIV test. And he asked me, and I said, they say I'm positive. And then he laughed it off. He's like, come on, you don't look sick. You know what a person that has HIV looks like. You are not that sick. I mean, come on, they are wrong, you know. They're just trying to scare you. So that was it. I felt like, okay, I mean, it's not a big deal. So why should I make it a big deal? So I just went home. I must put it behind me. I must just forget about it, you know. So I went home, and at home I didn't tell anyone. Up until I returned to Medicare's place to find out that he has told everyone in the house, you know. He just thought it over, and he was like, I mean, did she just tell me that she has HIV? I mean, HIV causes AIDS. Oh my God, she's gonna die and I'm gonna die. So there he was telling his mother that we are all gonna, both of us are gonna die because I tested HIV positive. So it was a drama of the year, you know. It was a drama. They all wanted to kill me, if I can say so. Because at that time, no one understood. I also didn't understand. Also, I was defending something that I was not sure, even if, you know, I'm going to make it. I was just defending myself, you know, like, I'm not going to die, you know. I'm going to go to the clinic. I'm going to get something, you know, there must be something that can be done. But I was saying only those words just to stop them from saying all these things about me.
Yeah. So, did Melikaya go and get tested at that point?
Well, after this drama with me being HIV positive, his family actually called me and they separated us. They said we must break up. So we broke off. But just before I could leave the door, I said to him, you know, I don't mind our relationship ending because I will also have a choice. If I wanted to date someone that has AIDS and I don't have AIDS, you know, I would also think twice. But you don't even know that you are HIV positive or not. The only thing that we can do for you and for me is a favor to go and have an HIV test. I don't care about any relationship. We can break up because HIV is not going to go away from me. So we broke off and he went for an HIV test. And lucky, he tested HIV negative. So he came to the support group and I was so pissed because support group is for people that have HIV. And he was coming from school and he came with all these pamphlets and, you know, I was feeling like, you know, this guy, I don't know what he's doing here, you know, because, I mean, probably maybe he doesn't have HIV and here he is, you know. Maybe he has come here to rub it on, you know what I mean? So he comes and he's like, you know, Tembi, I just went for an HIV test and I tested HIV negative. You know, I'm sorry, I didn't understand at first. I panicked. I've read about HIV. I went to counseling and I understand that you're not going to die. So I had all this information that he was picking up the whole week at the libraries and putting one and one together. So he asked for me back and I'm like, okay, you know. But, you know, I'm like, okay, you are negative and I'm positive. It's not going to work, but let's try. So we tried and, yeah. But he told me that he was on window period. So they say that he's HIV negative, but he must go back again to see because the virus sometimes gets into the blood and it hides. So he went after 3 months and he was HIV positive. And now his family said, you were HIV negative and then you went back to her. You went back straight to her to take the virus. And you came back and now look at you are sick. So no one understood actually, you know. But we understand because we know how HIV works. So we understand that he had HIV maybe before I even met him, you know. I mean, you can never tell, you know. You never know who has it and who hasn't. You never even know how long you had it, you know, up until you went for an HIV test, you know. So it was a matter of, you know, I don't blame you, Tembi. You know, I don't blame myself because I was in a relationship before you. It's not like just because you tested HIV positive before me that I'm going to blame you. It's not like that. So ever since then, we tried to convince our families, educate them. My family didn't have a problem at all. My mother is Christian. And my it's interesting because my mother is Christian and my grandmother is a traditional healer. So I come from a really interesting family and I am like strictly science. You know, I'm strictly science and half-half, like, I'm strictly science. So my family was very supportive, you know. My grandmother didn't try anything. He just said, you know what, HIV/AIDS doesn't have a cure, but you can take your treatment. I'm not going to do any remedies for you because you must not take them. The only thing that you have to do is go to the clinic. And my grandmother said, you have to pray to God, you know. That's the only thing you have to do. You have to pray to God and everything will be all right. So I had support from my family, and I took Melikaya under my wing, and we tried to, you know, convince his family, try to educate his mother. And at the end of the day, we qualified, you know. And now we are one big, strong family, you know. Yeah. And we have Onwabo, and everyone is happy.
So that's right. You were pregnant when you tested positive.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, that is also one of the decisions that, you know, sometimes you think, maybe I shouldn't have done it. But anyway, it happens. But just before I tested HIV positive, just like any young woman, I always wanted to have family, you know. So there was a break point where I felt like, you know, this HIV has taken everything from me. I won't be able to get married. I mean, who would marry me? I mean, all those questions were popping up. Up until, you know, me and Melikaya got through some talking, and we're like, you know, I want to have a kid, because everyone was screaming this stupid stuff in my head, like, you know, the kid is gonna get sick, and you know, the kid is gonna get infected, and you're gonna die, and the kid will gonna be an orphan, you know, maybe your kid will be a street kid because you won't be there, you know, and the father won't be there, and maybe your family won't treat them right when you are not there. So all of these things were like kind of coming to me, and they made me feel like, maybe, I mean, I'm useless, you know. This HIV thing really does, you know. Really does, like, maybe kill you, or kill your life, or kill your dreams, you know. The only thing I have to do now is to, like, sit like this and wait to die, you know, and just wait up until I die. And there was a moment where I felt like, you know what, since I was going to a support group, the support group really helped me. I realized, you know what, no one can be me. I'm only me, and I can only make decisions for myself. If I choose that this HIV is gonna be an obstacle in my life, that's what it's gonna be. But if I choose, I'm gonna fight it. I'm gonna live my life the way I wanted to live it before I had HIV. It's just gonna get along with that. That's how it gonna happens. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna push it. I'm still young. I don't wanna die. I don't want to just be forgotten. Just, you know, TMB died of AIDS. That's all I had, nothing behind, you know. And not only, I didn't do it as a selfish reason to have a baby, to love me or something like a legacy to leave back. I did it because I wanted someone to love for myself. I wanted the baby. I wanted to love him. I wanted to give her everything. I wanted her to love me back. I just wanted to do, that's all I wanted to do. And there was chances where I was told that the baby might be HIV positive. And I prayed to God, and I believed in God that the baby, I know I didn't do anything wrong. The baby won't be HIV positive. God will not punish me like that. The baby won't, I had to believe. And I said, Melikaya, I believe. Even if the baby is HIV positive, there is hope out there. The baby might be HIV positive, but who knows? The cure can come out anyway, anytime. It's not like it's the end of the world. We have to wait and say, oh, I'm going to have a baby when the cure comes. You know, that's not going to happen. You know, this is life, and this is reality, and this is about me. It's not about HIV. It's not about, you know, it's all about me, what I want in life and what I believe in. So we tried, we talked to my doctor, and like for my daughter, he was very understanding. He took me through the procedure and explained to me what exactly is going to happen when I get pregnant. You should check my CD4 count, check my viral load, check my kind of CD4 count, and check my viral load. And, you know, everything just meshed there and then. It meshed, everything that's meshed. I was put on nevirapine, so that, you know, I was taken off efavirenz. I was put on another medication, and my CD4 count was like blocking too high. He was perfectly in health, and I was also perfectly in health. So I said, I mean, I'm not going to breastfeed. I mean, there are slightly chances. I got on nevirapine, and my baby got AZT. And I knew when I gave birth, on that day, before they could even come back with the results, I already told my family, no, Onwabo was going to come out negative. I knew it. The second test, everyone was like, oh my God, Tembi, we hope that you didn't breastfeed her. We hope that you were not careless with her, you know. And I said, no, don't worry. Onwabo was HIV negative up until today, and now she's crazy.
Well, she's three, right?
So now she is like so crazy now. She's crazy. But, you know, I'm happy, you know. I wouldn't say that I wish, of course I wish I didn't have HIV, but I love my life now, you know. I wish I didn't have it. If they would say, what's the one thing that you want? I would say, you know what? I want to live a positive, normal life as long as I can. I wouldn't say I want to be negative, you know, because that's, I know that's not going to happen. But if I would still have a chance to go back and change, I would change everything. So I feel lucky, you know. I know that everything happens for a reason. God put me in this situation. I'm in this situation for a reason, because a lot of people died just in front of me, and I'm still here. Why? I ask myself, yes, I'm taking medication. A lot of people die while taking medication, but I'm still here. Why? I'm here for a reason.
What is that reason?
I'm here to just, I know, I'm here to inspire people, you know. I feel like I'm here to inspire people because with me being here, with me struggling, you know, getting sick, going through family crisis, going through a relationship, having a baby, and still coming out and talking to people and say, I'm here, I'm a woman and I'm HIV positive and I'm living my life normal, you know, it can happen, you know. It can happen. But I always say that prevention is better than cure. You know, prevention is better than cure. If I was someone now, if I was 10, I wouldn't start to have sex, I'm telling you. I would think twice, or I would be well informed. I would actually know the consequences, not only the consequences of getting pregnant, HIV, emotional stress, you know, depression, all that kind of stuff. That strains a person and that kills a person more than HIV, you know. So I would really get myself educated if I would be in that point now. So I feel like anyone else, I feel like you're also in my situation, you know.
Yeah. How do you think you and Malachi got through your diagnoses together? That's kind of a miraculous and unusual story.
It is. It's amazing, you know. I think it's all God's work, because a lot of people were like, even in my family, they were telling Malachi, I mean, why are you still here, you know? She's gonna die, can't you see? I was sick totally. I was crying, I was begging him to leave me alone. You know, I was begging him not to come and see me because, you know, I was so sick and I thought I was never gonna die. But he said, I'm not gonna go anywhere.
This was before you started treatment?
Yeah, this was before I started treatment. And he would beg me, because at first I didn't want to start ARVs. I didn't want at first. I said, no, I'm not going to take them. Because there were all these myths surrounding us, telling us that if you take them, you miss one day, you're going to die. If you take them, you know, you're going to deform into this, you're going to be a big breast, big boobs and all that stuff, and you're going to be out of shape, and they are hard to swallow, and they're going to make you nauseous the whole time. So I was like, I'm not ready for that responsibility. But Malachi was there for me all the way. He said, Tammy, the only thing that's going to help you is to take an ARVs. And when I didn't want to go to the clinic, it's actually amazing. He was not even ashamed of me, but I was ashamed of myself. The only way I could go was to cover myself with a blanket. But he would just take me on her back, on his back with my mother, and they would take me straight to the hospital, you know. So I think it was all God's work, because everyone thought that maybe he was crazy or something, you know. I mean, everyone keep on asking me, what kind of love is that? Even his family, my grandmother was asking, why are you still around? You are young, you should be out there enjoying yourself. She's going to die, can't you see? You know? But we got through it, and here we are, you know? We're still going strong, yeah.
How did your Christian faith help you get through all of this?
It helped me a lot, you know, because I believed. Actually, it helped me to believe. You know, it gave me hope. It helped me to believe, to actually say, I believe, you know, I put everything in God's hands. The only thing I have to do now is to take my medication, take my treatment, and just put my health first, and everything else I leave to God, you know. It was up to him. I just had my faith in him. My Christianity really helps, because there were times when, you know, I wouldn't want to take the pills. I would cry. And then I would cry, and then I would pray, and I would think, I mean, I'm still here. Why hasn't God taken me? You know? So this is my opportunity. I still have time. I can take these pills. I still have time. Even if it's 1 second, I still have time. Why hasn't he done anything? You know? It's because he doesn't want to. You know? Because he doesn't want to. So why should I say, I beg him and say, I'm going to wait up until I die, because I'm going to die? How can I say that? You know? I still have that 1 second, that moment to take those pills and be alive. So I had faith, and yeah. And my mother's church tips worked. Although there was a time when she thought I was going to be cured. So it's a really like sad story. But now, you know, sometimes I look back and I laugh at it. I'm like, oh man, I can't believe really I was like sick. Even when they tease me, they're like, oh, when you were sick, oh, you were crying, and now you're fat. And now you're fat. You're telling us whatever you want. So it's kind of, you know, the support that I got. But it was different, you know, because all those years I was doing all that stuff, I have not disclosed to my father, you know, which was a no. I remember before I started to do the diary, I wanted to do the diary, and the diary really helped me, was the way of me of coming out, was a way for me to actually, you know, come out. And I was really, you know, I really wanted to do it. It was really helping me, talking to the diary, you know, recording alone, and I was talking to it and just pouring my heart to it. And what I really liked was that the diary was not talking back. The diary was not judging me, you know. It was just there, you know, when I needed it. But the only thing that was in front of that was the fact that I had not disclosed to my father.
This was the audio diary that you did for NPR for a year, where you recorded your thoughts and they put it on the radio and on the internet.
Yes, that's the diary I recorded.
How did that all start?
I think that was the time where I got a break, actually. It was a breakthrough for me. It all started where I was. I joined the support group, and Joe Richmond, who's the producer of Radio Diaries, was living in South Africa for 5 years, and he was doing this documentary about HIV, youth and HIV. So we met in Khayelitsha. He came to our support group, and we were like 20, and he interviewed us because he wanted to do this story. And I was like telling the guys there, you know what, guys, I'm going to get this story, you know. If only we can go there, privately, one by one. I'm not going to pour my heart in front of you guys. I'm sorry. But that guy I don't know, and that guy is from America. And I live in South Africa, so I'm safe. So that's when I started to do the diary. Joe interviewed me, and he gave me a tape recorder. He's like, you know, I'm going to give you a tape recorder. You must just play with it. And I was excited, thinking that I was going to get a tape recorder like this, like a fancy, smart, sexy tape recorder. Only to find out he just gave me a huge, ugly, black, old tape recorder with a huge mic and huge earphones. Imagine carrying that for a year and a half, running around Khayelitsha. Everyone think I was going crazy.
So this is Khayelitsha. This is outside Cape Town, is that right?
Yes, it's the township, biggest township in Cape Town is Khayelitsha. So I recorded for a year and a half, and it was difficult, you know. I was not programmed to record anything. I just recorded, and then Joe would cut and take what he wants and cut whatever he doesn't want. But I did. I was told to record important things, like the highlights, like going to the clinic, disclosing to my father, taking treatment, having a discussion with Medicare, talking about to my mother about how did I come to decide to have a baby, and just my thoughts about the future and how am I handling being a mother, and what do I wish for Onwabo in the future, and all that stuff. So that's what I actually recorded.
So all of this was going on, and you had told a lot of other people, but your dad still didn't know?
Yeah, it was quite difficult. My dad didn't know, but before I could even finish the diary was going to be out. Anytime soon, he was going to know, you know. So I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go and disclose to him, and it's going to be on tape. I want people to actually see the reaction of how people really react when you disclose. It's either he's going to accept me, or it's either he's going to reject me. Whatever he does is going to be on tape. People are going to see that. Sometimes it's not about disclosing. It's about accepting yourself and being ready, and accepting myself and yourself and being ready before you disclose. Not making a mistake of, like, I have HIV, I'm going to go and disclose just because Tammy did so. You know, you might lose, you know, a lot of things. So for me, it was a matter of, I lose my dad, but at the end of the day, he'll still be my dad. He's going to understand me. Rather than you not doing actually what I want to do. It was either I'm going to lose him, but he'll always be my dad. At the end of the day, he's going to come around. Rather than me, not doing what I feel is right for me, you know. This is me I'm talking about, you know. I have to put my feelings first. So I went to disclose to him, and it was all on tape, man. And I was nervous. I went there 3 times, and I didn't do anything. But the 4th time, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go and do it. And my mother was like, you have to, you know. If you really want to help people, you have to start within your family. Whatever reaction, we are here to support you. So I went and I disclosed to him. And if you could hear the radio, you could hear his speech on the radio. He was shocked, you know. Because at first I just asked him just general question about what do you think about HIV and AIDS. He could not even let me finish. He was like, you know what? I get angry of this disease. Because you grow up your kids now, and tomorrow your kid is dead, you know. So he was so angry before I could even tell him. But when I actually told him, like, okay, I'm going to tell you, there's no going back. He was shocked. He was like, no, man, no, 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 really? I'm like, yeah. I told him it's been many years. You know, everyone else knew. But no one could have, you know, told him except for me. So he was very supportive, and we're still close. Yeah, although he's too much sometimes, you know.
Why did you wait so long to tell him in particular?
I think because, you know, I grew up in both sides of the family. But I grew up mostly in my teenage years. I was actually staying with my father and my grandmother. Imagine that, being a girl staying with your grandfather and your only father. It's weird. So I was staying with them on my teenage life, and it was actually not comfortable. It was not a comfortable situation for me. In order for me to have boyfriends, you know, to go out and do all the crazy stuff that I did, was for me to go to my mother's side, you know. So when I found out this whole thing about HIV, I was ashamed and I was scared to tell them. I had questions like, they're going to ask me, I mean, we were living here. You mean we're living with us and we're having sex? You know, all those kind of questions. You know, we took you like a young girl and you were doing all this stuff. I thought that was what he was going to say, you know. And I thought, no. On my mother's side, it's better because those are women, they understand. But for him, I didn't think he was going to understand.
How is all of your family at this point? I mean, you talked about Malachi's family at first being really upset. Do you feel like you have your family's support?
I have my 100% family support. My grandmother, my mother, my crazy brothers, my crazy sisters. I have Onwabo. I have everyone. I still have my grandmother. My grandfather, he's very, very old. He's like 92. He's too old. I still have him. I'm blessed. I have my family right tight together.
What do you think gives you the courage to speak out when so many people don't?
I think it's because it helps me. I think I saw the impact it has on me. That's why I think it's like this. Every time I talk, I get healed. Because every time I talk about it, it feels like it's a new wound. You know, it's not like sometimes I speak about it all the time, I'm used to it. No. It's like every time I start to talk about it, it feels like it's like a new wound. I'm opening up old sores. So to talk, it heals me again. Every time I talk, it heals me again and again. So that's the courage.
What's it like being a positive mom? Are you able to talk to your daughter at this point? I mean, she's still very young, but...
Well, she's still very young, but... I know that God is going to give me much more time up until she gets a little bit bigger so that I can explain the thing. At this point, she's young, but she knows that I go, you know, and talk, but she actually doesn't know what I'm talking about. But I have everything fixed up for her. I have the radio diary copies. I have all the work that I've done. I have pictures. I've put them in a box. So when she's ready, like old enough to understand and ready enough to see whether I'm here or not, she's going to, you know, I know she's going to be proud of me. So... everything is gonna be fine.
What's it like being out in your community? I mean, you're sort of out to the whole universe. Do you experience stigma at all in the township where you live?
Well, yeah, stigma in my community, I think stigma in every community is gonna take a long time before we actually break the stigma because of how people's minds act. People are still stereotyped there. There are a lot of cultural beliefs and there are a lot of myths going around. So sometimes there's too much stigma. And you know, sometimes it's like some people say I'm doing the right thing, and you get those people are like, I mean, what's up with you going around talking about your status? Something confidential, you should hide it, you know. You don't have to tell the world about it, you know. So some people think it's like, I don't know, I'm exploiting myself, something like that. So other people are like too jealous, you know. I've had comments like, you know what, even if you can go and tell the world, but the fact is you're going to die anyway. It's not going to go away just because you go and tell it, you know. So you can enjoy it while it lasts. So you get comments like that, but who cares? I mean, it's not like everyone's going to be here up until the universe explodes. You know, we're all going to die. So for me, it doesn't actually... I can say I'm bulletproofed. People say whatever they feel like saying. All I'm doing is focusing on what I'm doing. I don't care about all the comments, whether they are good or whether they are bad. I do what I feel is right for me. And now I have a responsibility. I have Onwabo. I can't manage to get stressed and take everything seriously.
Can you tell me a little bit about your community and about the township and just about your home?
Well, my home is in Khayelitsha. It's a big township, actually, you know. All the houses are mostly in shacks. But thank God now the government has started to build up, so we have like brick houses. My grandmother has a brick house, and my mother has a house. And I stay with Melikaya in our own house, but we are also in Khayelitsha. All of our family members are in Khayelitsha, but Khayelitsha is so big.
How many people live there?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, a lot. Imagine if you talk about sheikhs, you're talking about three houses in a small spot. Imagine how many are those. There are a lot of people. And the highest rate of people in Kaisha are mostly HIV positive. I think that's why the MSF clinic is based there. That's why the first rollout of ARVs was in Kailisha.
I'm sorry, can you describe that?
Kailisha is so big, and the most of the people in Kailisha are HIV positive. So that's why MSF is there. And it was the first time, it is the first township to receive ARVs, the rollout of ARVs. So I was lucky to be in that township. Imagine if I was not living in Kailisha. You know, I would have struggled like anyone else did.
I'm sorry, so it's the MSF is there? What is that?
It's Doctors Without Borders.
Oh, Medicine Sans Frontières.
Yeah.
Took me a second.
In Kailisha, there's pretty good antiretroviral access.
Yes, it's pretty good. We get them for free and, yeah, we get access to everything that we need, any medication, and we get it for free.
And it's not like that in the rest of the country?
No, it's not like that in the rest of the country. You know, there are parts of South Africa where you struggle to get the ARVs, where there is no rollout at all, where people have to walk miles to get them, or they have no access at all, or they have a limited access.
What treatment do you take now?
I am now on I am on nevirapine, D40, and 30C, D40, 30, and 30C.
And how has your health been since you started treatment?
When I started, my CD4 count was 120. And now my CD4 count has gone up pretty much, although I still have I still struggle to be back on my normal weight, because my normal weight is like 45 kg, but now I'm only 43, so I've struggled. I'm not actually reaching that. I also don't want to be fat. Excuse me.
You're very tiny.
But excuse me, I don't want to be fat. But imagine being tiny and short and being fat. No, it's not good. So my weight is fine now, and my health is good. And the weirdest thing is that I've never had any, like, I've had like opportunistic infections like TB. I had it twice. I've never had any STD. That is weird. I've never. And yeah, the only thing that is I had was TB. I had it twice and I treated it. So my health is fine. Onwabo's health is fine. We take her to the doctor, even if she has a running nose, because she likes to play outside. And Malachi is still doing good.
Malachi hasn't started treatment yet?
No, he has not started. He's sitting for, I think they're going to start him, because his sitting for count is like 500. And, you know, he had experienced like pains in the chest, but it's not TB. But I think it's something to do with the heart or something. Yeah. So he's still looking into it.
What's your CD4 on viral load now?
My viral load now is undetectable. You can imagine how many years I've been taking ARVs. And my CD4 count is like 7 something.
That's fantastic.
I know, I mean, from 1 to 7.
What was your count when you were first diagnosed?
It was 120. It was 167 when I was diagnosed. And they said, we should start ARVs. And I'm like, no, you know, all those stories. Then it dropped down to 120. And I'm like, okay, please, just give me this one chance. I'm going to do it right.
Switching gears a little bit, can you tell me how the audio journal has kind of launched you into this world of international activism?
Man, it has done a lot. You know, if I think back, doing that diary, it made me sick most of the time. I was like, I don't want to do this, you know. I don't want to spend my whole year recording something about AIDS. I mean, what people are going to say about me? This is crazy. But now it has transformed me into, first, a very mature woman and responsible. It has shown me the world, like, it has really made me, even if I was going to lose hope, but now I can never lose hope, because I've got all these people looking up to me. So that gives me the strength. So because of the diary, that's the only reason I'm here, you know, it's because of the diary. And every time I see Joe Richmond, I'm like, thank God you came to Kailisha and find me in those dusty streets. Who knows, I might be dead by now.
So your life has changed a lot. I mean, you've been a UNICEF ambassador, and you won an award for your audio journal. And what is this new life like?
It's nice, although I have to talk about the same thing. The boring part, it's nice, but the boring part is that I have to, you know, talk about the same thing. But you know, for me, every time I start to talk, you know, I don't talk to one people. I talk to a different audience. So it's a different vibe. And every time I talk, I talk about it, it's like it comes fresh, you know. But I know that I'm doing a good thing, and I know that, you know, people appreciate what I'm doing. And I'm, even if I don't help, I'm not going to save the world. But at least there's going to be just that one person that, you know, is going to take something back. It's a really nice world to be. Yeah, but, you know, it's fine when you are here. But when you go back to Kailisha, it's the same old thing.
How do you think HIV has changed you?
It has changed me for the better. Because I think if I really didn't have the test, I wouldn't be who I am today. I would be still the ignorant whoever I was, whatever I was then. I would still think low of people that have HIV. I wouldn't be involved in any HIV work. Imagine not knowing your status and being involved in HIV work. That's like crazy. I mean, there are a lot of things that I can do. So I'll be one of those people that say, oh, well, it can never happen to me. It's not like, you know, I'm sleeping around. It's not like, I use a condom once sometimes. It's not like, you know what I mean? I would be one of those people. I wouldn't take anything seriously. So it has transformed me to this person that is actually, you know, I'm taking things more seriously, and it has made me grow so quickly.
Just one more question. You're here in Mexico City. What is your biggest goal for the conference?
My biggest goal for the conference? Really, I have so much for the conference. But what I can say is, you know, my biggest role, the role that I want to play mostly to the conference, is the role of talking more to people about stigma. Because, you know, we don't understand that actually stigma drives HIV. You know, we can talk about HIV prevention and blah, 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 and cure and whatever, you know, using condoms, but you don't actually target the stigma. So since I have a personal experience, and I know that because of stigma, these and these things are happening, and because of stigma, these and these things will still happen, you know. I know that it's not going to take one day to actually go through people's minds, you know, because HIV is a very difficult, you know, subject. Every time we talk about it, it feels new. Every time we talk about it, it feels harder and harder and harder. You hear about it everywhere, but once a person starts to talk, you go back, and then you feel like there's a lot that still needs to be done. So I'm also here to put my input. Just working together, try to find solutions, especially for us young people, you know, because I think it really lies on us. I think it is really in our hands, you know, but we don't see it, you know, something like that. I think it relies on us, but we actually don't see it, or we don't want to see it, you know, and it's still going on.
Tembe, thank you so much for talking with me. Is there anything else you want to share with our readers?
Well, the only thing I can share is that, I think that we should actually acknowledge that HIV is here, and we need to do something about it. We should stop blaming people and blaming each other, you know. We should work around it, work around the stigma, discrimination, work around everything that's surrounding it, because at the end of the day, you know, the children are going to suffer, and we are going to suffer. And since I'm a mother, I really don't want Onwabo to grow up in a world like this. I really don't want her in the future sitting like this and thinking, oh my God, I tested HIV positive. I mean, come on. As if we didn't have the courage to do anything about it. We do have it. It's just that we don't want to, or we don't see it. I don't know. But it's up to an individual. You have to push yourself.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebody.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thanks for listening to thebody.com's podcast coverage of AIDS 2008. For much more coverage of this conference, including news, research, video, our photo journal, and, of course, more podcasts, visit us online at thebody.com/AIDS2008.